Well, good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for being with this conference call. As you notice, I didn't have a lot of commentary on the website this week. Primarily leading up to this and knowing that, excuse me, that this was coming, and have a chance to talk about some of the things that we might want to be concerned about or have some fear about. So let me just start with a little bit of economic data and talk about what is going on with the economic data. You know, in general, the economic data looks very, very good and continues to look strong. It's pretty amazing. It's astonishing to me how well the economic data is looking. It continues to move in a stronger and better position, and a better fundamentals seem to be coming about. There are more and more people, regardless of what the news says, regardless of even what the numbers say, for those that are reporting it, you just have to look around. If anybody has their ear to Main Street and is watching and looking around them, they are seeing dramatic moves towards reopening and hiring and so on and so forth. Of course, it is different in every part of the country. I know that. But I speak for a couple parts of the country that I am familiar with because I have friends that kind of keep me informed. So it's growing dramatically in some very big cities that people are getting back to work, more and more workers coming back into the workforce. We saw that today with the unemployment numbers. Everybody was expecting, because the mainstream media had convinced everybody, and they kept saying it's going to be well over a million again, hoping that it would be a self-fulfilling prophecy somehow. That didn't happen, and we had 960,000, give or take, first-time unemployment claims. Still a horrible number, but at the same time, again, just another number that continues to improve. And this is improvement since the middle of March. It should be looked upon as a very, very significant move that we're seeing. I think it goes back to, I said this a little bit this morning, but it goes back to the administration and all of Capitol Hill. They need to just sit tight and stop trying to garner votes. They need to be thinking about this other $2 trillion, $3 trillion that the Democrats want to spend, and we need to think long and hard about the need for that. A lot of times the need for that can be worked out if we just leave things alone. Listen, people, I do know this much, whether they, how they do it, is another story, but I do know this: they want to eat. They want to eat. They want to survive. They want to have a little bit of money to pay their bills. So people want to do that. Excuse me while I try to turn this thing off. I keep forgetting to do that, but there you go. So people continue to want to do those kinds of basic things. And they will go back to work, and they will get back to work, and they will, and their companies will be a little bit freer to open up if they feel as though that they have workers that are going to come back. And that is happening already, and that's why the economic numbers have looked a whole lot better. When they criticize the economic number, and I'm making a very general statement here, but when they criticize the economic numbers, we would be well served to remember that the economic numbers during this crisis, with the exception of unemployment, obviously, and I'll just say with the exception of March and April, most of the economic numbers have been as much as twice as good as the entire Obama administration. And that's when they were touting how great the economic numbers are. So if they were so great during the Obama administration, why isn't the mainstream media raving about the percentage of decline in the first time unemployment claims? Why aren't they raving about the NFIB optimism index or the consumer optimism index? Why aren't they raving about those numbers like they did in the Obama administration when they weren't even as close, anywhere as near what they are here now in the middle of a global pandemic? So we need to keep our eye on that and think about that. So the economic data continues to be strong. But most importantly, the thing that we have to look at, as an economist, I look at the trends. I love trends. I follow trends. Trends usually don't lie. There's always something that could happen, whether it be a geopolitical event, a pandemic, or a surge, or whatever it might be. There can always be something that can derail a trend. That can happen. But trends are very, very significant. And when we start to see 4 and 5 weeks or months of a positive trend, and I like five is the number that I've always looked for, it is safe to say that the trajectory of the economy is very good. And we are safe to say that right now. I would say the trajectory of the economy and the data is not very good. It's astonishing based on what's going on. So I think it would be well served to keep that in mind. Some are predicting a crash September and October. The same people that are predicting that crash are the same people that predicted the last 6 crashes and have been wrong. I suspect that most of them are going to be wrong this time. Certainly, there could be a crash, but it's not going to be for the reasons that the naysayers and the bloggers and the negative people are talking about. I got an email yesterday from somebody that I know talking about a particular person that they saw on another network, and this particular person has been saying the same thing. As a matter of fact, he's written the same book 3 times, and all 3 times he has managed to scare enough people to make millions of dollars from the same book. I mean, really, it's not an exaggeration. It's the same book. It says the same thing. The wording might be a little bit different, but it's the same book. And I give him credit because he's very enterprising and very rich as a result of all the fear that he's put in. But he hasn't been right. I don't want to say ever. He would dispute that because after the fact, when something has happened, he went on and created all this press saying that he predicted it, which he never did. So. I look at those things, and people look at them, they send it to me. First of all, I just say it just to save the, you don't have to send it to me. First of all, 2 things. One is I don't care what anybody else is saying. I don't pay attention to what anybody else is saying. And most of the time, I already know what they've said that you have sent me. So I am usually well aware of it. So you don't need to send it to me. I usually don't care. A lot of people, like this email I got yesterday, just trying to give me a heads up and tell me about it. I knew about it, of course, and that's fine. I guess that's fine. Just don't expect to change anything I'm looking at. I'm looking at a totally different set of numbers. I'm looking at only factual data. I'm not trying to create fear, and I'm not trying to create optimism. I'm just trying to be truthful in the numbers. I have nothing to gain by scaring people. I have nothing to gain by making people excited. As a matter of fact, if I have any gain at all in the ministry, it would be to scare people. Because the scarier I can make it, the more people are going to be nervous and feel like they need to partner. It's usually a surge in partnership, not the other way around. But I have no reason to do it because that's the wrong reason to do it, so I wouldn't do it. It's the truth. And so the economic data is in an unbelievable trajectory right now. And it's only because, and the mainstream media can say whatever they want, but it's only because of President Trump. I mean, it doesn't matter. I'm not asking everybody to like him. I'm not asking everybody to buy into everything he says or anything like that. I'm just saying he has created the reason why we're able to survive. And we were in a very, very good place before this pandemic happened. And guess what? That place is being held. There's a bookmarker in that place, and nobody has removed, or the pandemic has not removed, the bookmark. And when we get around to opening up the book again, it is going to open up right where the bookmark is, and we are going to pick up right from that bookmark. And that's exactly what we have right now. And the only one that seems to know that is Wall Street, because Wall Street has been incredibly accurate. Are there overvaluations? Yes, there are, and I'm going to talk about that now. So buying in the short term and overvaluations, there are a lot of things that are overvalued. Some of the things on my list would be perceived overvalue, but they're not really when you look deep into the detail. But a lot of things on my broad list are overvalued, and they're not going to ever make it on my buy list. There still are some good values and good buys, and companies that do have good forward-looking projections and outcomes, I believe, and I'll continue to add things and take things off my buy list. But the question is, do we get in? Look, you know, I mean, I had people today, two people ask me about a stock that was down. I can't comment. I don't want to sound sure, you know I'm not like that. I'm patient. I always like to answer. But, you know, I have nothing to say to the person that is staring at the computer screen and panicking because the stock's down 30%. I mean, all I can say is what I said today. You should not be in the market. And that is your first red flag, because you are going to be very miserable and unhappy. And you need to understand that you're going to lose a lot of sleep, and you shouldn't be in the market. Don't get into the market. You're the person that got into the market on some emotional thing that you say, I don't want to miss out. You weren't even sure what you were going to miss out on, but you got into the market. You shouldn't be there. You shouldn't be there. If you're looking at your stocks and your portfolio every day, you shouldn't be in the market. I'm just being honest with you. Does that mean you're not going to partner with the ministry? Yes. Yes, because you don't need to. Does that mean I'm hurting our ministry? I guess. I mean, yeah. But I it's not the ministry. I want to help people. I don't want people to be hurt. So it's you. When you ask me those questions, what do you think of this stock? It's down 10% in the last 3 days. When did you buy it? I bought it 3 months ago. I don't think. I'm not thinking about it. I don't have an opinion. I can't. You know, what do you want me to say to you? I mean, if you want to ask me what the technicals look like, do you have some forward guidance or something? Okay, I can try to help you out with that. But, you know, I can't. Do you know that what you're down in, 30%, somebody's up 60%, and it's the exact same stock? You know that? I'm serious. So every time you call in and you say, I got this stock and I'm down 30%, it's even happened on the air where people have called me and said, I'm up 117%. That was the most recent one. And somebody had just either put on Facebook or said they were down like 30%. So the company's good for the person up. It's bad for the person down. So the company has two different financial statements, one that is for people that are down and one that is for people that are up. The economics are different for the people that are up than they are for the people that are down. No, it's just a matter of when you bought it and how long you've owned it. It is just a function of when you purchase it. Everybody's portfolio is different. Even if you all own the same stocks, your portfolio are day and night. I say all this to you to say that we get caught up in too many things. Somebody asked me today, why am I not talking about the stock splits with coming up with Tesla and Apple? And well, number one, I absolutely despise stock splits with a passion. That's one reason. And the other reason is there's nothing to talk about. Nothing. I'll talk about the company that I care about. I will talk about it when there is an economic fundamental change in the company. And a stock split is worthless. There's no economic reason for it. So therefore, it's meaningless. And I also think that they're a horrible, horrible thing. I think they're bad for the market, and I think they're bad for investors. So, and I won't go into all the detail of it. And somebody said to me, well, they're good for income investors because we get more shares. So the stocks split 2-for-1. Guess what your income did? It got cut 50%. I mean, the dividend got cut 50%. You're still making the same amount of money, but it got cut 50%. It doesn't help you. It doesn't do anything. You're making the same amount. It's so irrelevant, and it's always done for the wrong reasons, and I just despise stock splits. You know how I feel. I can guarantee you that somebody is on this call or somebody is listening to this as a partner, because I know, I say this because I know, I have several partners that only buy the expensive stocks because they take everything I say to heart. I guarantee you that if they have a stock, if they have a portfolio full of very expensive stocks, that at the end of the day, in the long run, they're going to do far better than anybody that's chasing cheap stocks. Far better. Same amount of money invested. So you invest $50,000, they invest $50,000. They have fewer stocks because they have a lot of expensive stocks. You have a lot more stocks because you have a lot of inexpensive stocks. The person with a lot of stocks is going to do better. With the less stocks is going to do better because their fundamentals, they're good, solid companies. And they're going to steady, steady Eddie companies. And so it's another reason why I hate stock splits, and there's other reasons too. But I'm going to say this about getting into the market right now. There is some values on the website in the buy list. I don't have a problem. I don't want you to compromise your cash position, but I don't have a problem if you want to buy. If you are sold out and believe, in fact, that you are a long-term investor, I don't have a problem. If you're under 40, you can do whatever you want to do. I really don't have a problem with that, or under 50 for that matter. So you're long-term investors. There's good values out there. But if you're buying the good value today that is on the list, be prepared. That's the thing. I want you to be prepared. And I'm saying this, preparing myself for, or giving myself the excuse that when you call me in September, October and say, you said this stock was a good value, I bought it and it's down 40%, I am saying to you, they are good values because you're a long-term investors. And these companies that have great valuations, have great cash flow, and are doing something that is really good and productive are going to do well in the long term. So I would say to you then when you call me back in 8 years and tell me what you're doing. Or sell it. Then just sell it. You don't need to call me and complain how much you don't like. Just sell it. I mean, I don't have a problem with that. Just sell it anytime you want. So keep in mind that if you're getting in, there's nothing wrong with getting in. There are some good values. You can build some good things in your portfolio. I'm okay with that. Just keep in mind, it's not the stock I'm talking about that has got a good value that's on the list that you own. I'm talking about the market now. I'm making a general statement about the market. The market in general is overvalued. Okay? The market in general is overvalued. There's only two things that can happen. Valuations of the companies can get better. Give you an example. Great earnings reports in the third quarter will raise the valuation of the company. And the valuation, this happened about 3 years ago, the valuations of the company will catch up to the then it will be the reasonable value of their stock. Right now, the stock is unreasonable. It's just not reasonable. It's just not logical because valuations are down. But that doesn't mean the stock price has to go down. It can be the opposite, and valuations of the company can go up. The second scenario is that stocks will correct, there will be a correction in the market, and the actual value of the stock will go down to become more in line with the value of the company. That's it. One or two things are going to happen there. I can't believe, I'm not in the camp, that valuations or stocks are going to correct or drop for the reason that they generally do. The reason that we generally have that correction is that overvalued stocks have clearly outpaced the valuations of the company today or the valuations that that company could reach. In other words, in the greatest economy, the economy is not going to reach that kind of valuation. A good example of this is utility stocks. We have some utility stocks that are dangerously overvalued, the stocks themselves, overvalued beyond what should happen with the valuation of the utility company. So, therefore, the valuations in the stocks are likely, utilities I'm talking about, are likely to see a secular, a sector correction in utilities when the economy gets turned around. But I've told you that when I've told you to buy utilities. Most of the time I'm telling that to income investors. So I'm okay with you getting in. You can buy in, that's fine. I wouldn't be getting in, excuse me, if you are, you know, if you're very close to retirement. I wouldn't be getting in. Why? Let's let the dust settle and sit back. I'll tell you something else. If you're an income investor, I don't care if you get in or when you get in, because valuations, you know how I feel. I'm not going to say it because I say it all the time. To me, an income investor, it's irrelevant. And I want to just, I've said it before, but I can't say it enough. There are investors, partners, that think that income stocks are safer. And you buy income stocks not because you need the income, because you think it's safer. You're going to learn the hard way that that's not the reason to buy income stocks. And I don't know when, but you're going to find out the hard way. Because you're the people that call me whining because your income stock is down in value. Well, first of all, you're not an income investor, so you should sell it. You don't have to call and tell me you don't like it anymore. Sell it. Take your loss and sell it. Because you bought it because you probably thought it was safer, and you're trying to understand why my safer stock went down. Well, your safer stock wasn't safer. It's just another common share of a company. And that's why it went down. But you care because you're not an income investor, so you're not living off the income. So now it's just another stock that's going down. So I would submit to you that you ought to be in growth stocks, because when a growth stock goes down, it's going to come up a lot faster and you're going to gain your gain back a little bit quicker. So if you're in it for that reason, because you think it's safer, it's a big mistake. Okay? So I, and you know, you hear my frustration when people call about that. Well, get out and get to be an income, figure out what you are. If you're an income investor, then why do you care if the stock that you bought for 20 is $10 when you're still getting 50 cents a share? Why do you get excited when the stock you bought for 20 is going up to 30 when you're an income investor and you're never going to sell it because you get paid on shares and you're still getting 50 cents a share and your income hasn't changed even though it went up more? Why do you, that you, if you're truly an income investor and you're doing it for the dividends, technically the only reason you sell it is when they cut the dividend. There's no other reason to sell it. Now, there may be a situation, a company's going bankrupt, something like that, and I'll tell you to sell it, but other than that, you know, you're it's an easy place to be. But if you're not taking the income and you're not living off the income, I'll say what I've said to other people. You're going to be a very, very unhappy investor. And you're going to blame the stock market when you should be blaming yourself for not understanding that. And I'm just saying, if you're an income investor and there's a good dividend out there and you're buying it for the dividend, that's great. Buy it and don't worry about what the price is. Now, if it's way up, that means for the amount of money you're buying it for, you get fewer shares. Now, that directly impacts the amount of income you get, and you should care about that. So, if you're a true income investor, you can get in and out anytime you want. But you have to be understanding of the income that you receive pays the amount of money that it pays because you own the share, not because the share is up or down. Just simply because you own it. You own a share, they're paying that much money for every share that you own. Does that equal a percentage of the share price? Of course it does. So you may be getting confused because when you look at the chart, you say it's paying 7%. And you're saying, okay, now my stock's down 30%. I'm getting 7% of a smaller number. No, you're not. You're getting the exact same amount of income because you're not getting the percent on the value. So when the stock goes down, your income, instead of 7%, it's now paying 12%. Oh, that's good. No, it's not. You're not getting any more income. You're still getting 50 cents a share. It's irrelevant. And I know I've said this 100 times, and I apologize to all of you that are sick of hearing it. But I need to pound it home because I'm trying to make your life a little bit more relaxing and easy. So we're still, if you're investing for the long term, I believe there are great values on my list for the long term. I do not want you to compromise your cash position. I hope and pray that on November 4th, I can put out an email that says this might be a good time to compromise your cash position. In other words, this may be a time to get a little bit overweighted, a little bit overloaded, buy some of those good value stocks sooner rather than later. Don't worry about giving up your cash, because when some of these, you're going to end up overweighted in a number of sectors, and you'll be able to sell off some of those stocks for a profit and replenish your cash that you should have. that's just a hope. I hope it's not a dream. I hope it's a hope. And it is. So maybe that'll happen. The inflation concerns seem to be getting a little bit better, although I am concerned about the devaluation of the dollar, which is inflationary. So I'm not ready to give up on my concerns over inflation. So I will stick to that. The other thing that I have learned, that because I have talked so much lately about various types of my C funds, C whatever, those cash funds, that new partners and people coming in are assuming that that is cash. It is not cash. Cash is money market or a CD. That is not cash. That is an investment in something that is low volatile but still has volatility. That is putting your cash into something that you put $10,000 in, and next week you might have $9,800. That doesn't happen in a money market account or a CD, but it can happen in those. You might also, in next week, have $10,200. So they have volatility to them. They are exposed to what is going on in the market. That is not cash. So it is something that you have opportunity to earn a little more income than you might in a money market or a CD, and that's why they're on there. But you have to be willing to accept the fact that they could be down on any given day. Okay. Short-term investors, it's easy for me. I have a note to talk about that, but I don't really know how to talk about it because you shouldn't be partnering. If you're a short-term investor, you shouldn't be on this call because this call is for partners only. So you shouldn't be a partner because you know my strategy has little to do or nothing to do with short-term investors. This is not a good time for short-term investors. I am still going to put out a strategy on my prior to the elections. So you'll get that, and I'm going to walk you through how that's going to work on a video. So we're going to still have that, and we're going to continue to do that. I want to finish with this. I want to reemphasize the trajectory of the economic data. I want to try to emphasize this and downplay it at the same time. The trajectory is very good in the economic numbers and in the economy in general. There is no arguing that we are not on the right path with great potential. There's no arguing that. It's obvious by the numbers. So I feel good about that. I feel very good about that. So the economy is not doing good. The economy is not great. The economy just kind of is what it is, and it continues to be on an upward trajectory or an upward trend, and I do not see that changing anytime soon. So that is very positive. So it is the reason why, if you are a long-term investor, 8 to 10 years, you're going to invest and not look at it again. I'm okay, even in this environment of getting in. If all the press out there is right, if the negativities that people are telling you about that you're reporting to me on all happens, I will say then what I'm going to say now. Who cares? It's irrelevant. You're in the market. You're going to be all set for the uptick. When it happens, you're going to go to new lows, meaning you're going to go up higher and higher, higher than where you were, which is going to put a new bottom in for you, and things are going to be good. Will you have some sleepless nights? Yes, until that happens, but I'm not going to lose any sleep over it, but you might. But you're a long-term that means you're a long-term investor that doesn't really mean it. You just think it's the right thing to do, but you don't really mean it. So I think that I feel very good about the election. I feel very positive that President Trump is going to get reelected. The presidency is his to lose. I don't think he's got to worry too much about winning right now, but it certainly is his to lose, and he could lose it if he, you know, isn't careful. So I think we're good. I will tell you this. I'm not saying this for any self-serving reason. I don't have to because you're already all partners. I think that you who are partners are in a very good place. You who have been partners for a long time and didn't get out of the market in February or March, you are in a very, very good place. Because I don't even know how many new bottoms you have put in. I don't know, but there's been some. So you're in a better place today than you were in March. So it's a good time to be a partner. It's a good time for me to be doing my analytics and giving you the information that I've been giving you. My concern for me personally in the information I give you, my concern is trying to make a prediction. Well, that's the wrong word, but trying to ascertain what the new normals are going to look like moving forward. There is going to be plenty of new normals. I just was looking at the TV. I'm going to digress for a minute. I just saw a stock come up on the screen, up 23%. I have had, for 5 years, I've been wanting that stock on my buy list. It's Sherwin-Williams Paint. Unbelievable company. I've never had it on my buy list. I say that so that you can write that on my tombstone. One of my biggest mistakes was never putting Sherwin-Williams on my buy list. And I just see it. And I just thought, every time I see it, I get aggravated. But it is what it is. Sometimes it's one of those times where I drift from my instincts. I need to drift a little bit from my instincts. And I'm too much of a stick in the mud and to my analytics to do it. But anyway, I just thought I'd say that because there are some good calls that I sure have missed. Anyway, so there is, you know, I really believe that the stats that 72% now of people are more fearful now than they were in the last presidential election to admit that they're going to vote for Trump. We see the fundraising of Joe Biden because of Kamala Harris. That's coming from big corporations that I can almost guarantee you aren't going to vote for Joe Biden. Nobody wants to be the company that is not supporting a woman of color in a very politically correct-driven world. Nobody is going to come out and admit that they're not going to do it, and they're proving it by the money they're given. They're looking at that strictly as some sort of prideful saving and spineless attitudes that they can't admit that they're voting for a better candidate, because it'll make them look bad among their buyers, their users, their board, whatever it might be. There's a lot of that going on right now as we speak, because I see some Wall Street firms. I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that their higher executive management is encouraging their middle management, and their middle management encouraging everything. Whatever you do, don't vote for Biden or we're all toast. How can you vote for $15, $16 trillion worth of tax increases? It's insanity. And they know it. So don't get caught up by that either. So I'm putting all of that other garbage aside, and I'm saying, look, I think Trump is going to win. It's his to lose. It's his to lose, but I think he's going to win. And all he's got to do is stay away. Don't even, you know, pretend like Kamala Harris isn't even in the room. Just don't even talk about it. Just ignore the topic. Just move on. Stay away from it. Try to stick to the numbers. If there was ever a president of the United States that could sit back and rest on their accomplishments, it's this president. He has done things that nobody has ever done. He needs to find a way to say those things in a nice, easy way, but constantly reminding the people of what has happened and what's going to continue to happen. He's going to continue to do that. And that's all he needs to do. If he does that, he's going to win. I think he's going to win by landslide. But keep in mind, China, who's very powerful, has to have him removed. They got to get rid of him. They got to get rid of him. And they'll do whatever they got to do, but they got to get rid of him. So I will be one of those people that if he doesn't win, I will probably support him in the battle that will ensue afterwards. It is way too, and I'm just praying that the intelligence agencies are on it and they're looking out for it. So but in the meantime, I am going to have a strategy for the elections. So look, I'm going to just leave it with steady as she goes. Everything is good. If you're in, boy, have you been in since the first of the year? You're in a really, really good place. I would say to you, well, what about all these people saying, I'm going to say what I said last conference call. Stop listening. Why are you listening to it? You want to listen to it, then you deserve to be scared. They're really good at what they do. There's a personality on the radio. I won't mention the name because everybody knows who it is, and I don't want to deal with the email. But there's a personality on the air that a lot of conservatives like and such. This person has never been right. Never been right. I mean, if you can, if you, they're always right after the fact. So am I. The difference is, I generally don't say I said so. I say that a lot because I like to help you understand that there's a good reason why you're listening to the show. But it's not by me, it's by the grace of God, and I'm grateful for it. But it's really tough for me to fight with somebody that has some sort of special credibility for one reason or another and is might be saying the sky is falling. And I don't have any desires to have that debate or to fight it. I just, you know, I think that the most important thing you all can do, the most important thing you all can do is to follow your instincts. And if you believe that a person is smarter, wiser, and giving better advice than another person, then why would you listen to the other person that's not giving as good advice? Why would you do that? Why would you follow that person? If you do, it just is confu- it just brings confusion. Hone in. If that's somebody you admire and you want to follow, you should admire that person and follow them, but you shouldn't be listening or reading all the other stuff because you're just going to get frozen and make mistakes. I believe a lot in instincts. I believe most of those nudges are of God and not of anything else. I know I said it's the last thing, but I'm just reminded of this. I want to explain one more thing about financial issues in our strategy and my analytics. I will be the first to tell you that I'm not the sharpest tack in the box by any stretch. I'm a good, solid economist. And though I may not be the smartest, I'm not sure what determines the smartest, but I'm sure there's many people out there a whole lot smarter than I am. And I respect that and I get that. But I tell you, there's nobody out there that I can't out-homework. So I may not be smarter than that person, but I guarantee I can out-homework them. And I can almost guarantee you that I'd be willing to bet that I do out-homework them on a regular basis. So it is an important strategy for me to do my homework on all of it. Now, each time I do some homework, I am praying that God is giving me the wisdom. But I want to say that to say this. My strategy is not the best strategy out there. I'm assuming that. I don't know all the different strategies that are out there. There's a lot of them. You know, everybody's got a different thing, but mine's not the best. I am reasonably certain about that. But I don't want you to come to financial issues because you think that I'm the best. I want you to come to financial issues because you love the Lord, because you're sick of grieving his heart. You're sick of stressing over your money. You're sick of not having a God-given peace that you can get. I want you to come to financial issues because it's a conviction in your heart to do what we're doing. Not because of me, not because of the strategy. And not because you are placing such a high value of your money that is going to get in the way of your worship. And I would say, I'm probably optimistic and wrong about this, but I like to be optimistic about this because it motivates me. But I would say to you that I believe that 90% of the partners of this ministry feel better than they've ever felt about their money, have more peace about what they're doing, and are more convicted for the things of God and their walk with God than they've ever been. I know 90% sounds ridiculous, but I believe it to be true because I've had opportunities to talk to so many people eyeball to eyeball. I miss terribly the town hall meetings for that reason. If you're not at that place, I would ask you as a personal favor to me to stop looking for it and start praying for it. And maybe through prayer, God will give you the peace of the 90%. And God will put you at a place where this all comes together for you. That's what I want. And selfishly, it'll be great because it'll help me too. It'll be a better show. It'll be better, you know, if it can be better, it will be. But because we'll have more people that have a great peace about our ministry. Our ministry and what we're doing at Financial Issue Stewardship Ministries on our radio program has now become about a third of what we're doing. It's not everything we're doing. It's not half. It's about a third. We have so many amazing things that God has allowed us to do. And some of these things take time to build and to grow. And because I can't bear to put things out in a formal way that feels mediocre. I you know, you don't know about a lot of them. But when you find out, you'll see. We are ministering to people, and one of the greatest things anybody has ever said to me was Dan Steiner from Preborn a couple weeks ago when he was on the air. When he closed the interview and he said, "No, Dan, you're the greatest organization for pro-life than anybody in the country." And what he meant by that was our willingness to save the lives of babies above all else, and our willingness to feed the orphans and the widows and the hungry in the name of Jesus Christ. Not just feed them, but feed them in the name of Jesus Christ. See, I will stand before the Lord and may be accused or may be reprimanded by God for not being a good steward in certain areas, but I don't believe that I have been a poor steward of the megaphone that God has given us. Maybe a whole lot of other things I have, I don't know. But I have worked hard and try to be the best steward I can be of the voice that God has allowed me to have to sow to millions of people around the country. And I have used that microphone for other things that I know are well-pleasing for the kingdom. So I say that to you when, I've never said this, but somebody on yesterday, a friend reminded me that I needed to say this and kind of encouraged me to say it. She's probably on this call, but we're doing some incredible work for the kingdom of Jesus Christ. Oh, I'm not preaching the gospel, which is the greatest thing in the world. I'm not doing that. I'm not leading people to Christ every day and evangelizing and having tent meetings and really, really solid things that are proclaiming the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's not what God called me to do, and I thank and praise God for that. But we are doing an amazing work for God's work, for God's ministry. And I am so honored and blessed that God would choose our ministry to grow so that we can do those things. And I want you to know, if you make a gift, that you are giving to kingdom work. You're not giving to just, you're giving to some amazing kingdom work that God has allowed us to do. And, you know, we don't have major donors. We have one major donor, a man and woman that just really get what we're doing and want to grow it. And I'm so grateful for that. But, you know, I hear ministries, I consult with ministries, and I know some ministries. And I think sometimes of the major donors, oh, yeah, we got this much from this person. And I'm always thinking in my heart, it's sinful, but I do it anyway. I always think in my heart, I do repent of it. But in my heart, my gosh, what I would do with that. What I would do with that. And I know sometimes the organizations and what they're doing with it. And it grieves me a little. No, it doesn't. It frustrates me a little bit. And maybe even it angers me a little bit. Not the ministry. I'm not talking about the ministry that they're giving. I'm talking about people that just don't know or don't think about it. And so I know I'm really bad about asking for money, and I'm not going to try to get any better. I'm just is what it is. And I try to walk in faith, and I know God has always been faithful. But I tell you that because I want you to feel really good about giving to this ministry. And listen, I apologize to all of you because I am the world's worst. I'm not writing letters. I'm not sending out mailers. I'm not thanking you through, you know, letter after letter and asking you for more money, but thanking you and telling you how I'm really, really bad. But I want you to know it's not because I don't appreciate you like you can't even imagine. It's not that at all. I have a hard time bringing myself to spending all the money to do that, to send out, you know, 50, 60,000 pieces of mail every week or every day or whatever it might be. I struggle with that. Now, I think I'm wrong about that. But so I am apologizing, but at least I am admitting that I think I'm wrong about that. And but I want you to know, you know, sometimes you get an email thanking me 3 months after you gave me a gift. And I hate doing that because it makes me feel even worse. But I apologize. I'm not good at it. And maybe you don't give for that reason. And if you don't give for that reason, I'm okay with it. And that's my, you know, shortcomings here, and I'm okay with that. But I do apologize for that, and I don't want you to think it goes unappreciated. It doesn't. There's not a day goes by Yvonne and I aren't shaking our head in praise to God over a gift someone gave us. And most of the time, those gifts that come in the mail are coming with some amazing letters. So I am so grateful. So thank you for that. I hope that's helped, and I hope you have a great, great week. I'm going to try to continue to keep up my podcast on the website. You all have shown and talked about your appreciation for that. I'm going to do it. But I want you to know I'm going to do it when I feel like I got something to say. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's better that way. It's easier for me, and it's better for you. So when I think there's something going on or there's something I just want to share with you, then I'll definitely I'm going to continue to do that every week. I'm not going to let that go away. I hope you have a wonderful day, and God bless you. Thank you for being on this conference call. I hope all the partners listen to it, though I know they won't. But I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you listened, and thank you so much. Have a great day. God bless, and we'll see you for Rapid Fire tomorrow.